guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
The war is back, baby. I don't know what they thought. I don't know what they thought. Yeah. I think that's 5 in a row, man. I just think so.
Get the flag. Get the flag, Zolgad. The Wolves are back. We the ones, Jack. Ant Edwards. D'Lo. Bees. Cat. Finchie. We the ones, Jack. Wave the damn flag. We're in a Thanksgiving coma here on this Friday. Happy Black Friday to everyone. Score North offering our already free content for 50% off today. It's the Score North Black Friday special. You can get our already free content for 50% off.
Unbelievable stuff. If you've not read my stuff yet, you are in for a treat.
Dude, it is.
When I get cooking,
you want to see the chef cook.
When Zolgad's Roundup starts to percolate and cook, and it starts to really crescendo, you are in for a delight.
Yes, you are. And it's Internet. All available for free on ScoreNorth.com and the Score North app.
Roundup Column of the Year candidate is all I'm going to say. I think that word is used by some.
Get the flag again.
Hold on.
Yes.
Oh, boy, here we go.
17 years of doldrums outside of the one random, uncomfortable pop-up season.
I think so.
With Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler thinks he owns this franchise.
I think so.
Ant owns you, you clown.
That was great.
Get on the plane, Jimmy.
Jack.
We the ones, Jack.
Oh, so great. God, so much fun.
So, Feedback Friday, we'll get you Judd's keys to a Vikings victory over the San Francisco 49ers.
But let's
start with some Wolves feedback here. This is from Steve Cohen's Stan account on Twitter, who's also a Timberwolves fan. That was the type of night you can say the Wolves grew up as an NBA franchise. The type of night you can say the players grew up. The type of night fans can say this is the mark of a turnaround. The type of night fans tell their kids about this team one day. The Shug Movement on Twitter says, Jimmy Butler feels like he owns the last version of the Wolves. Anthony Edwards told him, today is a new day. We the ones, Jack.
Jack. Well, do you remember, I said this at the time, and I will say it again, not because I am a proponent of violence, but because I am a proponent of owning the situation. Do you recall I said Karl Anthony Towns needs to punch Butler? Just punch him. Just haul off and hit him. And
I thought that was a little over the top.
And let the chips fall where they may. Because if you lead this team, that's more than wins and losses. That's more than I'm really good at my sport. That is owning the floor. And what Ant did, and then I loved his quote, was Ant said, Jimmy, the whistle's gone. You're taking my basketball? I don't think so. And as Ant said, he's not going to fight. He knows he's not going to fight. Jimmy is as fake as they come. And Ant called his bluff. And to me, that was one of the most defining, important moments of that unbelievably fun game, is that Ant said, what are you going to do about it? And you know what Butler said? Nothing.
He said nothing literally in the moment. Yeah, I guess I'm not going to do anything. And then he said nothing with his play. He didn't get a shot off in like the first 10 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Because he doesn't like being pushed.
While Anthony Edwards, Edwards, so give him sort of a soft literal push. But the figurative push that Ant Edwards gave Jimmy Butler, two nights ago, was even more powerful, right? It was, I'm going to drop as many points as I want. I'm going to pull up from three. I'm going to get to the rim. I am going to posterize your team, which we'll get to that in a second. One of the most ridiculous highlight dunks of my life watching Timberwolves basketball.
Yeah.
All of it was symbolic. Yeah. I mean, it was a religious experience for Timberwolves fans.
Here it is. Here it is.
Wave the damn flag.
In the wind. Thanks to the Wolves. We got a Wolves flag now.
Judd, you were in the building for that,
oh,
and
I was
watching on TV, and like the energy was just coming through the screen and through
yes.
the speakers, and
yes,
you know. And by the way, Anthony Edwards, I think, was the conductor of the energy. I mean, he's an emotional player. He's clearly the most dynamic player on the court in almost any game he plays in. But I feel like the energy in that arena and the way that Edwards went to the corner after the game was over, thumping his chest and high-fiving fans like, you know, the Wolves are back, the Wolves are back. It reminded me of the iconic moment where Kevin Garnett stands up on the scores table, right? And he's thumping his chest and he's in it with the fans. And there's been moments like the Rubio Love era Wolves had some big games and the crowd was excited. And yeah, like the Jimmy Butler era Wolves, but this felt different. That's the first time I have felt that way watching a superstar emerge and a young Wolves team emerge since the Kevin Garnett days.
Yeah, and I think the dust up between Butler and Ant was so important because it did prove we are not going to back down. Like this is a guy that came into your gym while part of your team and basically tried to embarrass you and succeeded because no one had the guts, the cojones, to say, no, you're not going to do that. But like, if you want to start a full, that's a closed practice. That is licensed to start a full-fledged brawl. Like, that is licensed to go punch him. Who cares? Like it's going to leak out, but it's not on TV. You're not going to get suspended. Like, that was licensed for Cat to go beat Jimmy Butler up. He's
big enough. You're talking about the closed-door practice? Or
yes, the closed-door practice was the time to go do that. Like, you say, you're not – no, this stops right now.
Cat didn't have it in him, and Cat didn't feel like he had, like, the reinforcements behind
right.
him because it was Tibbs and Butler's team.
Right, but if you're Cat, you got to go just – Do it yourself. But I mean, Cat doesn't have that. He doesn't. He still doesn't. He never will. But Ant does. And so Ant basically said, okay, dude, you want to go? Let's go. And Butler, of course, being as fake as Jimmy is like, oh, no. And then, Phil, to your point, he disappeared. And Ant got better. And so, yeah, that building, the best part about that entire experience from my view is this. And rightfully so. Jimmy Butler is still and will always be reviled by Wolves fans, and he should be. And every time he touched that damn basketball, he got booed. And finally, if nothing else, Ant Edwards stood up for the fans. He's like, because before it was like, Butler gets the basketball, boo, and everybody else is like, yeah, but it's Jimmy Butler. And Ant and Kat's like, oh, yeah, we can't do a thing about it. And Ant's like, oh, no, we can. And so that's where Ant serves as the conduit and connection to the fan base, and that's what's exciting. Like, you finally have a player who is, one, damn good, because he's damn good. Two, he includes the fans. Like, he did what the fans wanted. Kat won't do that. And that's such an important step as far as bringing this franchise back to being literally, and this has nothing to do with or doesn't start with wins, but literally to being a relevant, respectable franchise. Because when Jimmy Butler pushes you around like he did, you're not respectable. Mm-hmm. You're sort of a joke. You're not a joke right now.
And they sort of like, dude, they punked Jimmy Butler and the Heat. I'm going to pull up some numbers here for you guys in that game. They the Wolves starters in particular. And by the way, Pat Beverly was not really part of that game. Hell, Cat only played like 4 minutes in the first half because of foul trouble. But
yep.
When Pat Beverly went out, I was kind of thinking, ah, dang, like he's sort of the, you know, if Jimmy Butler is the queen on the chessboard for the Heat, I think Ant Edwards and Cat are the queen, and sometimes D'Lo, but like the emotional and sort of the tough guy queen on the chessboard is Pat Beverly, right? Like, he can come in and sort of check Jimmy Butler in that regard. And so I'm glad that Ant wound up doing it. But the Timberwolves starters versus the Heat starters in that game. So Cat was a plus 21. Ant was a plus 19. D'Lo was a plus 9. And Jared Vanderbilt, who also had a great game, was a plus 8. For the Heat, Bam Adebayo was a minus 8. Jimmy was a minus 16. Tucker was a minus 23. And Duncan Robinson was a minus 26. So we're literally talking about, like, those guys kind of staggered a little bit, but we're talking about, like, a 16 to 50-point swing in plus-minus between the top and the bottom range of those starters. They absolutely took it to the Heat in the best way possible. I'm glad it wasn't like a brawl or anything. They just took it to them with basketball. They just played better basketball. Even like down Patrick Beverley and Karl Anthony Towns in the first half to only be down by 8 points at halftime because Jared Vanderbilt's grabbing all the offensive rebounds and the Wolves are finding ways to lock down on defense, right? Like you can say all you want about racking up big, you know, blowout wins against the Pelicans and the Grizzlies and the lowly Spurs, but the way that they've played against the Suns a week ago and then the way that they played against the Heat, those are two legit, those are like two of the top five or six teams in the NBA. And they look like they belonged in that crowd. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm more encouraged by the Heat win and the Suns loss than anything like a blowout win against the Pelicans could tell you or a blowout win against the Kings about to fire their coach. Like those two games are the ones to look at and say, okay, now the Wolves are turning a corner.
Cross-sport convergence too here. The Vikings and Wolves are both doing what they should do now at the exact same time, which is this. Cat played 32 Wednesday. And Phil, to your point, three quick fouls, came out quickly, didn't play basically the entire first half, and ends with 11 points. That game on Wednesday night spoke to, against a good team, spoke to basically, I think, and Cat would score more, but the ideal structure, which is, this is Ant's team, like Ant ran that show. Like there was no like, well, it was not close. Ant ran the emotional intensity. He was the emotional touchstone of that game, right? D'Lo played really well. And it seems like in the last, I don't know, five, six, seven games, he has found his role. He still jacks up some bad shots, but he also is doing far more within what I think is Chris Finch's structure. And so, like, if you take how that game unfolded, how that was played by the Wolves, aside from the fact that I think that you'd probably like Cat at 20-plus points, the structure of that game was really, really ideal. It was great because I love the fact if Ant can be the guy – I love that because he brings intangibles too that I'm sorry, Cat simply can't. This does not mean that Cat can't be great and that Cat won't win games. He will. But I'm saying in a game like this, which is really almost a playoff intensity game, this is where the intangibles of the Ant become so important. And I don't think Ant or Cat has that set of intangibles to lead like Ant does.
No, but that's fine. Like if he's gonna, perfect. You know, him getting in foul trouble early is just like the. I think he gets psyched out by Jimmy Butler a little bit. There's some deep personal stuff between those two guys. They do not like each other in any sense, and I think it's just, you know, he just gets a little. He instead of channeling that emotion in the way that maybe an Anthony Edwards does or some of the great players of all time, he lets it get to him a little bit. But that's where it's kind of nice that he can slide in as the second or third guy. And,
yes.
You know, did he put up big numbers in the game? No. But he had a couple big plays. He's blocking shots, and he's dribbling down in transition and setting up teammates for threes. And, you know, I like the way that he joined the party in the second half. And D'Lo deserves a lot of credit for just being much more of a complete all-around player now than he was really at any point in the first 2 years of his Timberwolves career. We'll see how much it continues, but... He's been, yeah, I agree. He's sort of found his role. Here's the next one here on Feedback Friday, where we just take your questions, comments, critiques, insults, whatever you want. The Score North app is a great place, by the way, to send us feedback. Steve Anderson via Twitter, however, says, horrendously bad call by the official on that Anthony Edwards dunk. You think that would have been called a charge if it was Michael Jordan or Kobe or LeBron James or, you know, pick whoever you want? Dude, that was... such an indefensible call. Like, I'm trying to think. It was Vincent, right? It was Gabe Vincent. Gabe, I think, Vincent, that's going to be, yes, on that poster.
He's still on the floor, there. I think. Well, dude, like he's implanted in the floor.
Draw an outline on that guy. Yeah. So it's one of the most embarrassing, and I know that I'm drinking Wolves Kool-Aid here, and so like all of this is probably hyperbole, but it's one of the most embarrassing calls I think I've seen in my life watching Timberwolves basketball. For one, because it was the wrong call. Anthony Edwards was taking off, about to drop the hammer. Like, the plane has left the runway, and this dude slides in for, like, a last-second charge. Don't reward him for that. Charges should be, like, only called if they're blatantly obvious and you've been standing and holding your ground, right? Like, he tries to slide in as the plane's taking off. And then secondly, how do you buzzkill that moment if you're that referee? The crowd is jumping out of their seats. It's one of the most ridiculous dunks of not just the season, but like that's one of those dunks that they would show like year after year on NBA highlight reels, right? Which they still should, regardless of the fact that that idiot ref called it a charge. But like it was the wrong call, so you know, get out of here. But also, like, why are you buzzkilling that moment on a borderline call, which it wasn't? But like, if you thought it was a borderline call, just get out of here, dude.
So from being in the building, I will say this, and this is rare in sports because, you know, if you have a touchdown and it gets wiped out, it's like it's wiped out. It doesn't matter how good the play was or the catch was. That was one of the few wiped out calls I've seen in my lifetime where it almost didn't matter because it was such a statement. And it was, and I'm telling you, the Wolves players on the floor, on the bench, like were, oh my God. And again, what was cool is it was in sync with the fans. And while the call got booed and the call was bad, I don't know that people cared. It was such a dominating in your face. Take that. We aren't going to put up with anybody's crap.
Yeah.
That the importance of the play almost stood, which was okay. We didn't get 2 points, possibly three, but you know what we did? We just showed we will kick your ass. And like, that's the thing about sports that I think people don't get. That's an incredibly important thing. And it doesn't have to be a fist fight, but what it has to be is you're a good team and we don't care. And there's no bully that's going to come at us now and be like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Gabe Vincent got in the way of a truck that was going downhill. And you can't, and dude, the referee can't say, we're bringing him back to life. No, he was dead. Like you killed him. You embarrassed him. And there was
rest
no
in
like
peace, Gabe Vincent.
But I mean, like the ref couldn't be like, no, that none of that. You didn't see that, right? Nobody Gabe. Saw that. Nobody
also,
saw that.
Gabe Vincent, Gabe dude. Vincent. What are you even doing? Like, just get out of the way, you clown.
But
God. If it would have been Jimmy Butler, it would have been even more perfect, by the way. Whether it was a foul or not.
I don't know if he would have went flying like Gabe did, though.
No, because he doesn't want any of that.
Gabe
smoke.
Was a little guy too. But anyway, the importance of that moment
Vincent.
Was not wiped out. And that was so cool because the place absolutely went nuts. And the basket being wiped out almost galvanized things more. Like, wait, yeah. You're taking that away?
Because it was like a two or four-point game. I think that would have made it a two-point game.
And wasn't Ant the perfect guy, though? Like, again, that was another – the Butler thing and that, to me – were such absolute statements of I am a badass. Get out of my way.
So to your point there, not I don't want to like make this because this shouldn't be about comparing Ant and Cat, but like I feel like if Cat throws that hammer down and they call it a charge, he goes apoplectic like he did a few games ago.
Well, he would have got
and
that,
needs
yeah.
to be like sat on the bench. But yeah, Ant was just kind of like Ant gave the like you know the you got to be kidding me, and then he was smiling. Like he kind of knew what you just said, which is. That was a ridiculous call, but look at the arena right now.
Yes, exactly.
And look at in this 2.5 hours of punking the Heat and Jimmy Butler, like whether that was an actual 2 points or not for us, it might as well be worth 10.
Correct.
Just with the vibe in the arena.
The statement
right?
dunk.
Yeah. Okay. Bennett via the Score North app says, since it was brought up today, it's a few days. Must have been listening a few days ago on the show. Karl Anthony Towns' player efficiency rating average for his career is 24.8, which would put him pretty high on the all-time list. This is pretty amazing, okay? So, Basketball Reference. Here are the top players all-time in career player efficiency rating. And so, player efficiency rating is, it's like a 15-ish-year-old stat. John Hollinger invented it for ESPN.com. He's been a front office guy for like the Grizzlies and stuff. and it includes all of your positive and negative accomplishments, if you will, your field goals made, your threes, your shooting percentage, turnovers, fouls, like everything that would happen in a game. And then it's also adjusted for like per 100 possessions, etc. So it's just everything that you would do in a game. It's not the perfect all-encompassing stat, but it's like it's one of the ways that you can use one stat to define a player's offense, defense, everything. So Michael Jordan's number one all time. LeBron James is number two. And this kind of validates the stat, right? It's like if your stat spits it out and like John Stockton's the greatest player of all time and Michael Jordan's 50th, then you might want to match your stat with the eye test. But so Michael Jordan's number one, LeBron James number two, Anthony Davis is number three, Shaq is number four, David Robinson five, Wilt Chamberlain six, Bob Pettit from way back in the day seven, Kevin Durant eight, Chris Paul nine, Karl-Anthony Towns 10th. I don't think he's the 10th best player in NBA history, but I think it just shows you how perhaps underrated he is and how skillful he is, which we know, and how efficient he is on the court. Like, he's not a guy – he does rack up some fouls once in a while, but he is not a guy that needs a lot of shots to score a lot of points. He grabs rebounds. You know, he's just a rock-solid player. He doesn't have the killer instinct that some of the other guys on this list do. But he's wildly talented, and I think this stat is very telling. 10th all-time in player efficiency rating. What do you guys think?
I mean, I would say that Cat still isn't taking enough shots. Like, I know he got in the foul trouble early on Wednesday. That delays things and makes things more difficult. But for how offensively gifted he is not taking nearly enough shots. I know, like, Anthony Edwards' mantra and vibe is, yes, where this team should be fueled and funneled from. But the ball still mostly has to go through Cat. No matter how good Anthony Edwards is becoming, Cat needs the ball in his hands more, like 100%. It's just figuring out a way when Cat handles adversity and when Ant handles adversity, they're two very different things. So you see more leadership qualities in Ant. But in terms of just pure basketball talent, I don't think it's close. Karl-Anthony Towns is wildly more talented than Anthony Edwards is.
I wouldn't go, I don't think that last part's true. I think Ant is. Ant is a special. He's not just. Ant's going to be one of the five or six best players in the NBA in like 2 years. Like, he's got the. Especially as a wing player who's going to handle the ball more and create his own shot. But the fact that Cat is probably the greatest shooting seven footer of all time gives him a unique advantage to do things on the court. He can score inside, outside. He can dribble drive. He can shoot free throws at a high clip. A lot of seven footers can't. So I think in terms of like pure talent, Ant is going to win out in a couple years because, I mean, and that's not a knock on Towns. I think Ant is legitimately going to be a top five or six, like Dwayne Wade caliber player once he fully figures out his game. So, but yeah, I agree. Cat should shoot more.
I would like to start a new sports metric called the JII, the Judd Intangible Index. Because what these things don't do is they don't marry the intangibles that players bring, especially great players, with their peer talents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Jordan is clearly number one. He had both. He would kick your ass, and he, when he arrived at the court, he was the best player. LeBron, same thing. Kobe's probably second or third. Like, he had, again, great player, but he also was going to kick your ass. Karl-Anthony Towns does not have that. Let me be very, very clear. Talent-wise, phenomenal. Like, phenomenal. He lacks the intangibles that make you truly great, though. Like that top five list is reserved for guys who are wired right and also have the God-given ability. A guy who falls low on the Kirk Cousins does.
Would it be the G?
Yeah, can we call it like the G?
Well, whatever you guys want to call it, it's the J.
Well, how does J-I-I get to J?
The G. The G? The G. The G is fine. All I'm saying,
come up with a better name.
Hear me out here. Kirk Cousins is a very talented player. He lacks intangibles. And Kat does too, and that's what we saw on Wednesday. Ant doesn't. Ant has the now. I don't know, is Ant truly gifted and a great player? I don't know yet. Like, I think that's still to be determined and unfolding. But does he have the intangibles of I want to kick your butt? Absolutely. Which is why when he came out and said, before he was drafted, I think I like football more, we all said, oh no, he doesn't like basketball. Okay, that's because that's what we thought. But the reality is, no, it's great. He wants to make basketball football, which is sort of what Butler does too. Ant is just more likable. But if your goal is to kick butt, you got my vote.
What if it's the Jiri?
The Jiri?
The Judd Intangible Rating Index. I feel like we need another consonant in there somewhere.
Hold on a second.
I don't mind just the Judd. What the? I mean,
the Judd?
Yeah, just the Judd. It's his name, and Judd talks about intangibles, and not even me kissing ass. The
Judd Index.
Yeah, the Judd Index.
The Jiri's not bad too, but anyway, I feel like we don't quantify that. I feel like we're like, but you can't measure that. What are we gonna do? It's like, yeah, you can. Just ask me.
Well, because I mean, this list, for instance, like it's literally everything that a player would do in a box score, right? It's your shooting efficiency,
yes,
and it's your points and your assists and your rebounds and all the things that you would rack up in a box score. And I'll gladly take a player that stuffs a box score over a player that has no chance to. But then when you take 100 players that are all stuffing a box score to some extent,
yes,
if you just leave it in PER form, that's how you get Anthony Davis as the third best player of all time. Anthony Davis doesn't – I think he's got a little bit more of that killer instinct than Cat does, but Anthony Davis –
yeah,
he can disappear in big games and for stretches and whatnot too. And Kobe, Kobe's not on the 10 here, but I think if we were to flush this out, he's probably somewhere in the top 20 or 25. I don't have the rest of the list in front of me.
He's top five.
Bob Pettit, by the way, very high on the Jiri.
I believe he played for the Hawks. I believe he played for the Hawks back in the late 50s, 60s. Great player.
Okay.
But a little bit of a slower league by then. Bob Pettit brings the ball up the floor and look at
the pitch basket.
Havlicek stole the ball. Havlicek stole the ball.
A finger roll from Pettit.
He did. The St. Louis Hawks.
St. Louis Hawks. Yep.
Back in the mid-50s to the mid-60s.
I know my Sid Hartman era NBA.
Dude, Bob Pettit. Oh, my God. This dude's stats are ridiculous. So Bob Pettit, let's see here. He was a 6'9 power forward.
Hey, it's Bob Pettit here. What do you want to know about me?
All right, he had in 1961-62, he averaged 31 points, 19 rebounds, and 4 assists per game, and shot 45% from the field. It's before three-pointers, so... got to the line 12 times per game.
Bob Pettit pulls up from 23, makes that shot as a two-pointer.
And wore super short shorts.
Super
short shorts.
Hey, that's pretty nice. Thank you.
All right, let's get to some other feedback here. Matt in St. Paul via the Score North app says, don't you think Vikings fans should tone it down a bit? They're only at 500 until they get a few games above that. I'm not going to get overly excited. We're not out of the woods yet.
I think, so I'm going to actually defend fans here, Vikings fans in particular, I guess, and I'm going to say this. I think they're excited because of how it looks. So it's not the record. It's the offense, right? And Jefferson's playing great. I'm not going to tell Vikings fans to tone down excitement when it seems like the team finally got the recipe right. So no. No, if they were winning games and it's like defense is still winning for us, and I'd be like, okay, 5-5 is not that great. But look at the last two games and look at how they've won those games. And I don't think it's fair to tell a fan base that is rightfully so excited by what they're seeing to tone it down when what they're seeing is what they've probably clamored for like 2 years now.
Yeah, people aren't excited about the record. I think everyone would agree that 5-5 is not the ideal record. You thought the Vikings would be better than 500. A lot of people did. I think people are excited about the product that they've witnessed offensively the last 2 weeks and if they can carry it over. And we'll have purple props this weekend on Purple Daily. But San Francisco's pass defense is very suspect.
Yeah.
And so you should be able to light up the sky against that football team. I am Lloyd on Twitter says, this is to me, but I think you guys can be lumped in here, too.
Sure.
You've always been too hard on Kirk Cousins. I don't see any Chiefs fans jumping ship on Patrick Mahomes just because he's not playing the greatest right now.
I think you can defend yourself. I'm going to allow you to defend yourself. I'm so tired of these Kirk Stan's attempts at spinning things.
Why do we have to lump Patrick Mahomes' name into anything involving Kirk Cousins?
That's why I'm sort of out on this one.
And like, I've seen this. There's a contingency of Vikings fans, Kirk Stans, if you will. And Kirk's having the best season of his career. So like, I'm not looking to trash on Kirk here, but why do you think Chiefs fans give Patrick Mahomes a little leeway when he has a bad five-game stretch? Could it be because of the championship that he brought to Kansas City a couple years back? Or the back-to-back Super Bowls that they've been to? The most valuable player, caliber player that he is? Like, why are we putting, on what planet does, other than like their PFF rankings this year, like on what planet do we put Kirk Cousins and Patrick Mahomes in the same sentence? You're doing Kirk a disservice by defending him in this way. We're doing a better job defending Kirk as guys who are very skeptical of Kirk's ability to deliver a championship than you, the actual Kirk Stan here. I am Lloyd. So stop putting those guys in the same sentence.
Yep. Okay. Totally fair.
Thanks for that space.
Nick
H via the Score North app says, I would like to thank the three of you, Judd, Dex, Phil, for helping me get through today. My wife and I had to put our cat down today.
Oh.
It was a much needed distraction listening to your show, even for just a little while. Thank you. Putting animals down is the worst if you are a pet owner.
Yeah.
So definitely feel for you, Nick.
Yep. Don't be afraid to cry. That's my advice. Because, I mean, that just sucks.
Dude, we were making our yesterday we were making for our Friendsgiving gathering here our world famous Italian sausage stuffing that we've now made exactly 2 years in a row. It's our new dish. We've got a dish that we made.
That sounds good.
We're adults. It's really good.
That sounds awesome.
And all I could think about was our little guy Tommy, who died a few months ago. Last year when we made it, he was just like trying to help and trying to eat all the food and stuff. It's like makes me sad. So we're here for you, Nick. Robert R. via the Score North app says, big fan of the show, great win against the Packers. If you guys could talk to yourselves after the Halloween Cowboys game, what would the conversation be? Like, if the version of you today could speak to the version of you right after they lost to the Cowboys, how would that conversation go? I guarantee that the Halloween night Mackie Judd Declan would not believe a word you guys are saying about how great the offense has looked now. Just 3 or 4 weeks later.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's 1,000% right. Because I would say now, if I could go back and talk to that post-game vent line Judd, I would say, oh my God, they finally did what you've been telling them to do. And that me would be like, no, they didn't. No way. That's 1,000% right. I would not believe back then that a light would finally go off and someone would be threatened with their job. I don't know, but clearly something happened. The only other thing is that Judd would be frustrated because it'd be like, hold on a second. So they finally got it. Like now it took till now, because last time I checked, Justin Jefferson's been on this team for 2 years and he was on this team for the first month plus of 2021.
I wonder if future 2 week Declan could go back to the Halloween Declan and say, hey, here's the deal, Dex, you're going to lose. Not just the Cowboys, you're going to lose to Cooper Rush. Like, it's going to be a gut punch loss. Like, you're going to lose to a guy who has not taken who's taken like two snaps in his NFL career and has been a practice squad quarterback for the Cowboys the last 4 years. But you are going to win. It's a guarantee. You're going to win these next two games. The offense will start cooking. So don't freak out over Cooper Rush, because I am still irked that this team lost to Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys.
Wasn't it out of a bye too? That was the first game out of the bye, right?
And
out
you should be a bye. But you should freak out, because the last two games are very frustrating in one sense. What would your record be if you just hadn't been so damn stubborn and obstinate?
You would have beat the Browns and you would have beat the Cowboys.
Yeah, and that Browns loss now is not a good loss.
You'd be 7-3, right?
Correct. Now. Right. So like you should be mad.
In fact, and you'd be one game back of a first round bye.
Right. And think about this. So we can say, well,
Declan's soul just left his body.
Well, but he's right to be pissed off, because the frustrating thing is now it's like, well, if they can beat San Fran on Sunday, they're almost, you know, guaranteed a playoff spot, the 6 or 7 seed. And I come back and say what Phil just said. Hold on a second here, though. If they had played smart, like if they had played smart, and I'm not talking about gotten lucky. If they had installed this system from day one,
yeah,
you'd be battling the Packers for the division title. And let me tell you, there's a big difference between potential home playoff game and the 7 seed.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd still be mad, Dex. I think you're right. Justified.
Yeah, I think you guys said it. I would have told the version of me a few weeks ago, this is going to infuriate you, but
yeah,
like, I know that everyone's calling for Mike Zimmer's head here, but he will have an epiphany and the Vikings will pull out some wins against teams that they're not favored to beat. So yeah, as much fun as it has been to watch this offense the last 2 weeks, it is equally frustrating. That Browns game in which, again, they couldn't find Jefferson, couldn't find Thielen for big plays. And then the Cowboys game was just like a masterclass in conservative passing attack, right? Just, and it's almost like they went in the way that the Gophers go into some of these games against, yes, inferior opponents. Like, let's not give the game away.
Yeah,
let's just dink dunk.
In the Vikings case, the dink dunk thing makes you furious because the scripted plays were so good. It's like now they've said we should keep up what we're doing in those scripted plays, Clint. Because think about that, the scripted plays. Browns game, I believe they scored first drive.
Cowboys game, possibly.
Same thing. So the scripted plays were great, and then it disappeared, and now it doesn't. So, yeah, this is not a clear cut. They found the right thing, and I'm just overjoyed. This is also extremely frustrating because of the fact that you should be battling for the division title and a home playoff game.
Indeed. And I don't know if you guys can hear.
It was a tough Thanksgiving for Keys, boys. I'm going to tell you
Keys
right now. The surly was flowing.
Judd's keys to a Vikings victory
over
the San Francisco 49ers. So, yeah, what's Keys' favorite Thanksgiving libation? I'm sure it's surly.
It's furious. It's furious followed by Axeman.
What's his favorite food item? Why is it libation? What's his favorite food item?
Do you mean food? He likes prime rib. Contrarian. He doesn't like turkey. Okay. He doesn't like turkey.
Okay. We had duck yesterday at our game.
I had a strip steak.
Oh, duck's, good.
Strip steak?
Strip steak.
Mm-hmm. Little strip steak. A little rare.
I got a question for you guys on Purple Daily. So don't give away too much.
Duck is underrated. I'll just say
I've never had duck. I love
It's good.
All type of foods like that. I've never
melts
had duck
in your mouth. I'm just going to say that.
I think I've had duck.
Take the beak off first.
Yeah, naturally.
All right. Apple. We have Judd's keys.
Don't kill the athletic dog.
God. Judd's keys to a Vikings win over the San Francisco 49ers.
Gentlemen, there's four keys. Four keys I've been presented with by Keys, who's sleeping in the corner now. No surprise, but let's go. Key number four. Keep them separated. That's right. Keep them separated.
Offspring?
Yes, it is the offspring.
Yes, keep them separated. hey, you don't want your left tackle. Christian Darrisaw. Okay. Now this guy plays both sides, but this is going to be one of Christian Darrisaw's best tests so far. Nick Bosa will play both right and left end. He is at, for the 2021 campaign, gentlemen, 10 sacks right now, 5 on each side, though. The Darrisaw matchup in particular intrigues me. Bosa has 5 sacks in the past 4 games. If you recall the playoff game that these two teams played a couple of years ago, in which the Vikings got pretty well just their butts kicked and they got smoked by the Niners, Kirk Cousins that day was sacked 6 times. The Vikings as a whole, 147 yards. Now the line is actually done, and Kirk, I think delivering the ball quicker is a big deal too, has done a pretty good job of keeping Kirk clean. In fact, his highest sack total so far this year is the 3 sacks that he had against him against the Bengals in week 1. But you got to keep them separated if you're Christian Darrisaw, and that starts with Nick Bosa not getting essentially what could amount to free runs at the Vikings QB from his blindside.
Wow. Yeah, I'm trying to decide how much of that game 2 years ago in the playoffs is even comparable to what's going to happen on Sunday. I mean, the Niners have played really well the last 2 weeks. I don't think this Niners team is of that caliber.
I don't either, but I do think they like to play tough. Mm-hmm. And the Vikings in that game didn't play tough. So I guess my question is, are you prepared, much like Ant did on Wednesday, are you prepared to punch back, figuratively?
All right, the next key here.
Okay, the next key is extremely appropriate for today, but a little bit gross. So I'd like to apologize. Keep in mind, it's keys, not me, who writes these. Stop the runs. Wow. Stop the runs. The Niners have run the ball 40-plus times in each of their past two games, wins against the Rams and Jags, and piled up more than 150 yards, and probably just as importantly, held on to the ball for at least 38 minutes in each game. And that comes from a combination of backs Trey Sermon, Eli Mitchell, and then Deebo Samuel, a wide receiver, gets moved to the backfield and is extremely fast. The Vikings, I believe, if I am not mistaken, are going to have exactly zero members of their starting defensive line for this game. That's going to present problems. They come in not a great team against the run. And, of course, the thing is, for this offense to cook, it has to have the football. So if San Francisco has elongated drives and plenty of possession time, that's going to become a problem. So the Vikings, with those who do play in this game, are going to have to, the day after Thanksgiving or 2 days or 3 days, stop those runs.
A little Imodium will go a long way, I think, to stopping the San Francisco offense. You know, I don't know if the Vikings need the ball for much more than about 23 minutes time of possession.
Right.
With their quick strike offense, you know, I think time of possession tends to be overrated. I think people think, well, you got to keep the other team's offense off the field. Well, if they're a quick strike offense, it doesn't matter if they score points. I think it's more about, to what Jubb was saying, you're so depleted defensively. If those guys are depleted and gassed and they're on the field for like 40 minutes and they're tired, then it makes it harder for them to stop the drives. So it's going to be less about total yardage defense and more about bend but don't break. If you can be good in the red zone and decent on third down, if they want to run up 350, 400 yards of offense but stall out in the red zone, that's probably the best case scenario until you get some of these guys back. Like if Michael Pierce comes back at some point.
And then just quick strikes.
Quick strike. Quick
Jefferson.
Jam.
Jefferson. Thielen,
quick jam.
Jefferson.
Quick jam.
Little quick strike. Little Jefferson. Bam.
All right. Key number two. Are we counting
yes.
down to key
oh,
number
yeah.
two?
Very good.
Okay.
Very good. Key Sorry. Number two.
I don't have my key sound effect because I've got the NFL bed here playing. So
that's fine. Okay. Key number two. This is a message directly to the people who office at TCO Performance Center in Eagan, and that is this: actions speak louder than words. All right, so Zim came out on Monday and said, if Kirk throws a pick, he throws a pick. I mean, it's fine.
If he dies,
Kirk has to understand.
Yeah.
If he dies, he dies. If he throws a pick, he throws it. I'm not going to get mad. I'm the new Zim. I'm the new improved Zim. I'm the Zim that's, I'm pals with Kirk now. We meet on Thursdays at the from 2 to 2:15.
I'm
every
dating
Thursday.
A 27-year-old Instagram model. What
exactly
do I care?
Right.
Throw a 10 interceptions. I don't care.
Now,
Kirk was potentially, and they didn't count, so it's fine. But Kirk threw what could have been potentially two real killer picks against the Packers. Both came back. And to the Vikings' credit, they didn't freak out. They basically said, no, we're going to stay the course, right? Well, eventually, in probably a game like this, Kirk's going to throw a real-life pick, and it's going to count. There's going to be no flag.
A real-life pick.
It's not going to be dropped by an incompetent safety. It's just going to be a pick, and it's going to kill a drive. And the question then becomes, does everybody say, hey, we signed up for this, right? Like we all signed the waiver, and we all know that the ride is going to be bumpy at times, but when it's not, it's going to be great. So can they back up? And this is true of Mike, it's true of Kirk, it's true of probably Clint as well. Can they back up what they're saying with the, it went wrong, we might have given up a touchdown, but we're going to continue to do what we do, which is pass the ball. Actions will eventually speak louder than the words.
The Vikings are like a boxer or a UFC fighter, like on offense, that their only goal lately, up until the last two games, has been, we just don't want to get knocked out. We don't want to get hit. So we'll just kind of dance around a little bit, maybe a jab here, right? It's like, well, you know, sometimes if you throw that haymaker, you open yourself up and the opponent might punch you.
Yeah.
But just because the opponent punches you doesn't mean it's a knockout.
That's right.
believe in the strength of your jaw is what I'm saying. If the Vikings are a boxer, like, you're going to take a punch. It's fine.
Exactly.
Throw a haymaker back.
But will they do that? That becomes my question.
We'll find out. We'll find out.
You got to prove that you are willing to have a screw up and not get freaked out by it. And key number one
is brought to you by our friends at Federated, because the Vikings should be looking to avoid risk management here.
Right.
Let's throw caution to the wind. Federated is here to help business owners with risk management. If you're looking to protect your business, and the Vikings should be opening theirs up, mm-hmm. all right? But Federated's here to protect your bottom line, protect your employees. They've been around for over 100 years in Owatonna, Minnesota. They are one of us. A lot of Minnesota sports fans there, too. Bunch of masochists. But you can find out more about the resources they provide at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. All right, key number one.
Key number one from my friend Keys, clean that up, is this.
The puke?
I don't want to talk about it.
Or is he having trouble stopping the runs?
I don't want to talk about it, okay? I'm just going to do the key like this. Key number one is this. Are we in for a San Francisco treat?
Wow.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Is that a Rice-A-Roni reference? What's the San Francisco
treat?
Rice-A-Roni,
the San Francisco treat. And it's Santa Clara, but I don't care. They are still, as far as I know, the San Francisco
49ers. It's quite a ways 49ers. Away from San Francisco.
It is a long ways away. And yeah, but anyway, the 49ers cornerbacks, which include a guy by the name of Josh Norman, who I think is now my age.
Wow.
Let's just say they've had issues. And you know who has not? Justin Jefferson. Last two games, 17 catches on 21 targets, 312 yards, 2 touchdowns. The two games before that, 5 catches on 9 targets, 90 yards, and a touchdown. In other words, we are in for a potential San Francisco treat from Justin Jefferson mm-hmm. against a pair of corners who might not exactly hold up real well against Cousins, Thielen, Jefferson, and even Declan's guy, KJ Osborne. A San Francisco treat could be on the way when it comes to the passing attack.
I'm going to give you one stat here that I'd like to see a change this week. People talk about the deep pass attempts, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about intermediate pass attempts. Let's All right. talk about 10 to 19 yards in the air. So that little sweet spot, just maybe over the top of a linebacker, but we're not talking about 40 yards down the field here.
The seam?
The seam.
Just right down the I love this.
Could be a deep out of some kind.
Oh, God. Okay.
All right. So Kirk Cousins and the Vikings passing game coming into this contest rank 17th in intermediate pass attempts. Tom Brady ranks number one. Tom Brady has 107 intermediate pass attempts, which is where he's made his entire career. Kirk Cousins only 65, so Brady has 42 more intermediate pass attempts. Josh Allen's high on the list, Matt Stafford, etc. You know, Cousins is down there with Mac Jones, Sam Darnold, old Ben Roethlisberger, and Teddy Bridgewater in terms of like just intermediate throws. That's what I want to see more of, just 2 or 3 more times per game, and they've been doing it the last couple weeks. But let's that's where the money is, right? Justin Damn Jefferson right. about 12 yards coming across the
turns
middle.
Turns it into 25, 30.
Boom.
35, 40, 45, yep. 50. He's loose. Yeah. All no, right. you're exactly right. And Kirk's got that touch. Like that's a Kirk throw, actually.
Yes. And it doesn't require perfect protection. Like, you know, if you're letting a guy go down the field further than, you know, those intermediate throws, you can ramp those up.
Love it.
A little bit. So those are four keys, Judd's keys to a Vikings victory over the 49ers.
Four quarters, baby.
Boy. Nice job, Keys.
I like the Offspring reference, man. I love me some Offspring.
Got to keep him separated. Yeah.
Yeah, rock solid fan. 90s band.
Hope the left tackles do one all right.
Really bad live because he can't hit the high notes live.
Oh, really?
Like most of their songs are like borderline, yeah. Like hard high notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So play. The Creed guy can, right? No? He can't hit the high notes?
What's that guy's name? Scott Stapp?
I got it wrong one time, and then our guest got mad at me. So,
can't say I've heard Creed live, actually.
Nope.
So,
Kirk has, sure. but he won't pay for him.
Yeah, we found that website. There's a website that shows you like what the fee is to get
Creed's
a band
playing.
To perform live. It's like I think it's like $150,000. It might be closer to $200,000.
Go to play in my backyard.
Yeah. If you make $30 million a year and you have $150 million in earnings the last 5 or 6 years, You can't stump $100,000 for.
I'm paying for
McCartney.
See,
that's the
kind
of rich guy.
House.
If I ever get to the point where I'm worth like $200 million, like some of these, I'm going to be the most like fun, hilarious rich guy. I'm just going to have like yacht rock bands coming over to play for my friends and family.
Michael McDonald before he dies.
Michael McDonald, yes.
Before it's too late.
Come on over, Michael. Just play about 2 hours of yacht rock classics for me and my friends.
Okay. No, it's good.
Here's $250,000, Michael.
Michael, you were supposed to start an hour ago. Are you getting close? I'm such a long way to go. all right, Vikings 49ers on Sunday.
Oh, God.
Happy Black Friday to everybody.
Before we go, come on. Let's do it one more time.
Wave the damn flag. That's right.
I'm waving the flag. That was such a big win.
Timberwolves.
So much fun.
If we could just not play another game the rest of the season, actually. Okay, I don't even want this Charlotte game tonight because I'm afraid they're going to lose by 20. Just
oh, my God. This is such, and the thing that game showed, again, is this is such a fun basketball town if you give them something decent. I mean, it's such a fun, like, people were
okay,
so
was the
jacked.
Arena? I saw some pictures of empty upper deck sections. Was it not as full as they were perpetuating a packed house?
No, I found this out. Post game, and I did not know this. Evidently, you were allowed to. The NBA has given a waiver of sorts, where if you don't have to tarp them, but if you declare certain sections, you're not going to sell tickets. You can do that and claim a sellout. So there were two sections. I think it was like 201 and 203 in the end zone, across from where the press table is, that were completely empty. What I didn't know is those are like declared sections where they're not going to sell tickets.
Oh,
got it.
So they can announce a sellout and say it's a packed house, but it's confusing.
So it wasn't like 10 sections. Was it pretty full?
I didn't look behind me, and so I don't know if they did the same. It was not full. They did declare it a sellout. It was not full, but it was a good crowd, and the crowd was great. Like,
it's a sellout to me. It's a sellout to me.
One more time.
Wave the flag.
Wave the damn flag.
Wave the damn flag. Jimmy Butler, you're a coward.
You know what?
Guy who got trucked by.
You know what I
got
to say?
The guy who got trucked by Edwards on that dunk, you're a coward.
I want the 7 or 8 seed now. That's what I got to say. Forget this. Forget this 10 seed crap.
I my sights are set higher now. I don't even want the play in. I want the 6 seed.
LOB? Yeah. You want the LOB, don't you?
Well, I'm saying I want to avoid the play-in. I'm not going.
I think
LOB
you want
yet.
The LOB.
Beat Charlotte tonight, then we can talk LOB.
You know what you do? You make a playoff run, and then you come back and say, you know what? We really need a new arena.
I think if you beat Charlotte tonight and get above 500 for the
Mark Lowry,
like how many times have they been above 500 this late in this? And I say this late in the season, like in the
Tibbs
heading into
year, right?
December. Well, yeah, that year,
Tibbs playoff year. That's probably it, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, there
like in the
might
last 15
year
years,
in there
probably
somewhere.
One of the rare times.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get our research.
Anyway,
team
the
to look
flag
at.
Is flying. It great night.
The W's are flying for the. What a time to be a Minnesota sports fan right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah.
Wild.
The Gophers are about to win the Big Ten West for the first time on Saturday.
Basketball undefeated.
Let's rock it. Yeah.
Gopher basketball.
They beat Jacksonville with a 6-man rotation last
like
night.
12 people there. Yeah.
They played a 6-man rotation against Jacksonville University, dude.
I didn't look at the box score. Yeah, oh my!
What are they going to do against Michigan? I guess pray.
So is Ben Johnson like trying to wear these guys down to a nub before
well,
they
he
get?
He doesn't
conference?
Have any. I mean, he doesn't have players. They like their entire roster except for Eric Curry is basically new because everyone transferred out or graduated.
Eric Curry is how
it's
old?
Like 40.
How old is he really?
I think he's 23 or 24.
Wow.
I think he's 24, somewhere like that. Yeah. It's like a ninth-year senior.
All right,
anyway
all right,
we got to go.
Minnesota sports.
Got to go.
All right, peace out. Mackie and Judd, see you guys.